Hi, this is Barry Liss at Informs, the Institute for Operations Research in the Management Sciences. You're listening to Science of Better, a series of podcasts about ways that analytics and math modeling help people like you and organizations like your own. Analytics in OR are known for their contributions to business and the military. Less known are the ways that government and nonprofits make crucial decisions and set important policies using advanced analytics. In today's segment, we talk to Professor Peter Kolesar of Columbia University. Professor Kolesar is a lead researcher of the 2010 Edelman finalist team for the Delaware River Basin Commission. Facing a long-standing conflict, his team found a fair way to resolve the needs of the New York City reservoirs in upstate New York, as well as the needs of local residents, fishermen, and environmentalists. Professor, welcome to the Science of Better.
Well, thank you, Barry. It's a pleasure to be with you.
We read so much about the water wars in California in the early 20th century. What water war, so to speak, was the commission facing?
Okay, well, I think that the word wars may be a little bit strong, but sometimes the controversy got heated enough that perhaps wars is a pretty accurate description. Let me give like a little background. The Delaware River starts in New York State's Catskill Mountains, and then it wends its way down past New York State, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey, and it empties into the Delaware Bay. So what you have in parallel, like to the problems that you have out in California, the Colorado River, we've got four states and several major cities that depend in one way or another on the waters of the Delaware. And there have been then disputes about how that water is to be allocated. There are many aspects to it. Drinking supply for New York City is a major aspect of it. The health of the oysters in the Delaware Bay is another. And the issue that really gained my attention here was the health of the trout in the upper Delaware. The trout fishery up there is one of the finest in the United States. So there was a conflict of how is that water in the Delaware going to be allocated across these various constituencies and uses.
And what was the controversy that arose?
Well, the particular controversy that got me started was that the trout are a cold water fish, and they depend for the health of the population on adequate releases of cold water into the river during the summer from a set of dams that New York City had built on the headwaters. The fishing conservationists, environmentalists, had seen that these releases were too low in the summer times to sustain the trout population. In fact, from time to time, there were serious fish kills. And New York City argued that they
not had to be confused, by the way, with the term fish kill, the old Dutch word for parts of New York.
No, I mean literally having fish
dying.
And insects that the fish feed on in the river actually die.
Right.
So New York City then argued that it had built the dams to supply water very securely to the city, and it was following a very conservative policy because it had to be able to have enough water in the reservoirs to secure that water supply in the face of a potential drought. So the controversy really was there enough water coming into the system so that the needs of the environment and the fishery could be met without imperiling New York City's water supply.
A little about the nuts and bolts of what's involved. When do reservoirs release water, and where do they release it? Is it into neighboring rivers? I've heard you talk about overflow.
Okay. Well, what we're talking about here are three dams on the headwaters of the Delaware, and the releases from the dams are happening constantly. Every day of the year, continually, water is being released into the river, and in fact, in the upper sections of the river, that water constitutes what the river is. So we've got 365 days a year, water is continually being released in order to maintain the river. The major issue that was of concern to the environmentalists is how much of that water could and should be released during the summer, particularly when the water temperatures got too high for the trout.
And can we run down all the major actors here? In addition to New York City and fishermen, there were several organizations and local groups.
Yeah, let me start on the political side first, that you have four states, and each of those states have a different interest. New York State, as distinct from New York City, had some concern about the fishery and the environment. Delaware had environmental concern because they felt that the water releases had an impact on the oysters in Delaware Bay. Pennsylvania had a big interest in protecting the water supply of Philadelphia. And New Jersey diverted water from the Delaware into its canal. So each of those political actors, including New York City, had a stake in the game. And then on the other side of the picture were the environmentalists. We had four major trout fishing conservation organizations involved, each of which had somewhat different ideas at the outset about what a good release policy would look like. And then, to complicate matters, shortly after this research project began, there were three major floods in the Delaware. And statistically-minded folks in the audience would appreciate that these were three 100-year floods within a two-year time frame. So the people
I don't know what that means about either the term 100-year flood or about climate change, but please go on.
Yeah. Well, a 100-year flood statistically means a flood that in which the expected number of years that you would wait before seeing another flood of that magnitude would be 100 years. So these were three very, very unlikely events. And as a consequence of those floods, people who lived in the valley and were subject to flooding wanted to change the way the reservoirs were operated in order to provide increased flood protection. So there were basically the environmental concerns on the one hand, water supply concerns on the other hand, and then in addition, protection from flooding. These three factors had to be balanced in order to come up with a feasible and hopefully better solution for governing the water releases.
And as in all difficult situations, each party was right. There were no villains here.
I would say each party was right, and some parties were actually righteous.
A little bit on the historical background. I think you've covered most of it, but I understand there's also some Supreme Court decisions that governed what had to be done.
Yeah. Well, the origins of this problem go back to the 1920s, when New York City, growing, decided it needed to expand its water supply system, and it proposed to build the three dams on the headwaters of the Delaware. New Jersey brought suit to stop the city from building the reservoirs. The other states joined in the suit, and the resolution of this issue came in two Supreme Court decisions in 1931 and 1952, which gave the city the right to build the dams, and subject to a constraint on how much water they could take out, that was limited and prescribed, and subject to a constraint that whatever else New York City did, it had to maintain a minimum flow in the river at a critical point about 100 miles downstream of the dams. So this was the basic framework for the broad allocation of the water rights. In addition, the Supreme Court said that any future changes to the water release policies would have to be unanimous among these four states and New York City. And the actual water release policies had evolved over time from those Supreme Court decisions, and what we were facing was a desire to change those rules, but do it within the framework that the Supreme Court set out.
And you had a deadline, am I correct, or you had an upcoming special event?
Yes, we had a unique opportunity in that when this research project started, we knew that the current operating rules were scheduled to expire in about 18 months. So we had the attention of all the parties involved in governing the river. They knew that it was incumbent on them to change the rules.
What was the actual date?
The actual date of the expiration of the rules was May of 2007.
Okay.
And we began our research in January of 2006. So the rules were to expire. No serious research had been done on how to replace them. And so we decided to step into the fray and take an operations research approach to the problem. And our notion was to bring to the river administrators a solution that we would generate and then try to argue for acceptance of our solution.
Now, as I recall from your presentation during the Edelman competition in Orlando in April 2010, you went through several steps to model water levels and releases towards the solution you were working towards. Can you give us a layman's explanation of the research that you and your team did?
Yeah. Well, the first step really was to get a basic understanding of this river system, of the three dams, the tributaries of the river, the needs of the various players, by looking at the history of precipitation, water flows, reservoir levels. And that gave us our first clues as to the real nature of the problem. The thing that struck us most strongly was that 25% of the water coming into the reservoirs was actually spilled over the top of the reservoir. So,
when you say over the top, you mean into the river or onto land surrounding?
No, into the river. It would go into the river, but it would go over the top of the reservoirs. And the meaning of that is that that water would generally be warm water, and those spills would happen at times when they would not be helpful to the environment or to any of the parties. So our view was basically that spilled water was wasted water. Now, I want to contrast that to released water. Released water would be water that would come out through the valves at the bottom of the dams, and that water would come out according to meet a variety of environmental and other needs. Our goal was to change the operations of the system to convert the wasteful spills into environmentally useful releases.
And
coming back to your question. So
yes.
That was step number one, was to get this basic understanding of what the dynamics were and where the leverage was. The next step is that some of the environmentalists had an idea for a solution. And our next step then was to build a simulation model and test out their solution. It turned out that when we tested it, it proved to be infeasible from the viewpoint of assuring New York City's water supply. But in it, there were a germ of some good ideas that we then worked with. So building a simulation model was key to doing our research. It permitted us to test policies, get a notion of what would be feasible and what would not be feasible. And then we faced the dilemma that New York City and the four states came out with a sensible edict that said that any new release policy could not increase water supply risk in New York City. And what we were faced with then was finding out what was the relationship between water releases and water supply risk. So we used the simulation to conduct a series of experiments that were designed according to statistical experimental design principles. This is a body of knowledge that comes from statistical theory, which permits one to do a set of experiments that are very, very efficient and permit to build just what we were looking for, a predictive equation. We wanted an equation that said, if you change the releases at certain seasons by specific amounts, what would that do to water supply risk in New York City, and what would that do to the habitat? By conducting this careful series of simulation experiments, we were able to use regression analysis to calibrate a set of those predictive equations, and those equations became the principal design tool that we used in actually coming to the final policy that we proposed to the politicians and to the Delaware River Basin Commission.
And I understand that the program came to be known as Flexible Flow Management Policy?
Flexible Flow Management Program.
Ah, okay. And can you give some basic recommendations or some of the basic elements of your recommendation?
Yeah. The most important thing, and this will be appreciated by operations researchers, was that the old policy did not explicitly link releases very tightly to the amount of water in storage. So this was the principal change that we made. We devised an algorithm which would, by season, look at how much water is in the reservoir, and then decide exactly how much to release on the basis of the amount of water in storage in order to balance the water supply risk with a habitat need. So in structurally, this was essentially a simple feedback mechanism, the kind of mechanism that's common to inventory control policies used in industry around the world. So we were motivated by the big body of literature on inventory theory, and essentially we're applying inventory theory then to this water supply problem.
Is this a unique application?
No, it's not unique. That there have been applications of this kind to dam management problems over the years. Our situation is a bit unique in that our focus was primarily on the environmental issues. The traditional applications have been more often made in situations where the dams are hydroelectric dams and the goal is to generate power. In our situation, the New York City dams were for water supply, not hydroelectrically. So we were somewhat inspired by research that had been done before. So I wouldn't say this was unique in the sense of nothing like this ever having been done, but somewhat unique in the environmental focus.
I interrupted you. You were telling about the flexible flow management program.
Oh, and it's basic principle then. So what the program comes down to is really a set of tables. We constructed, using operations research theory, a set of tables. And so on June 16th, the person operating the reservoirs turns to the table that applies to June 16th, looks at the reservoir storage, decides how much that is, and then the table tells him the prescribed release in order to improve the environment. What this did was to greatly simplify the management problems of those who had to administer the dams. We gave them essentially a simple tabular solution for what had previously been a very, very complex decision problem.
And what would you say the results are from the program?
Well, this program now has been in place since October of 2007, and it has been modified during the implementation. Initially, the Delaware River Basin Commission implemented our algorithm, but somewhat more conservatively than we recommended. They saw from the first year of operation that our predictions were validated and that they could indeed afford to release somewhat more water. So the system has now been changed to conform quite exactly to our original proposal. And the benefits can be seen, but this is a relatively short time frame in which to evaluate a change to the environment. What we have seen is that the trout population is much healthier than it was 3 years ago. We have seen absolutely no change in the security of New York City's water supply, which we had predicted. And this year, this spring, was a spring of extraordinarily heavy rainfall throughout the eastern United States with a lot of flooding, but no flooding in the Delaware Valley, in the Delaware Basin. And in part, we attribute that to the flexible flow management program, which has in it a set of high releases when the dams get too full, and those high releases have created a void which this year helped us keep from any flooding. So the implementation has been really successful, but it really will be in the long run that we'll be able to tell what the true benefits are, because this is a program that's designed for long-run benefits over many, many years in the face of all the variability that Mother Nature throws at us.
And I'm assuming that you'll be able to adjust the program as that variability comes your way.
Well, adjustment is built in. The feedback mechanism has an automatic adjustment in it. So there's a very basic level of adjustment, and that's why this program has been called flexible flow management. There's a notion of flexibility built in. But there's another level of flexibility that we are shooting at. Although the program has been implemented and is successful, we in the conservation community continue to do research on this issue, and we're proposing to introduce another level of flexibility, which would make explicit use of forecasts of precipitation and forecasts of demand, something that's not currently being done. And our calculations indicate that by taking into account those two factors, as well as the amount of water in storage behind the reservoir, we can get to a much, much higher level of performance. Again, keeping New York City's water supply very, very secure, but providing even more benefit for the environment. So we're continuing right now to do research on that, and we are working to reinvigorate the Conservation Coalition to get energy and the environmental community behind this proposal.
And how are relations now between the different organizations, the environmental community, the City of New York, Trout Unlimited, Nature Conservancy, the Delaware River Foundation?
Well, let me start first on the political end. We started in a very contentious and almost confrontational mode of work. As those of us in the coalition, vis-a-vis particularly New York City and the other parties to the Supreme Court decree. As time went on, the operations research analysis that we did, the facts that we generated, and our view of balancing the interests of the various parties became really evident to the city and the four states. And so we passed into a mode of increased collaboration, you know, but without obviously being in complete agreement on things. But it's a much higher level of trust and understanding now than there ever was before. And I must say that participation in the Edelman Award competition has increased that level of trust, because we were in increased contact with New York City and the Delaware River Basin Commission in preparing for the competition. That increased our mutual understanding of various viewpoints and our mutual respect. So I think that we are poised now to work in an even more collaborative mode moving forward. On the other hand, irony is now that having the flexible flow management program in place, the more extreme elements of the conservation community have really vocally declared their dissatisfaction with the program in place, saying we really need more water. And so the relationships among the conservationists have kind of broken down, and we're now actually beginning to work hard to try to reestablish a community of interest.
So it's unfortunate, but as in most human situations, you couldn't bring 100% satisfaction to all the parties.
That's true. And so I am a fly fisherman. I'm a professor at Columbia. I live in New York City. And my view all along was to balance all of these interests. And I've had throughout my career as a major objective of getting some change. That is, I don't want the good to be, or the optimal to be the enemy of the good. And I must say that sometimes in the conservation community, people hold more extreme viewpoints. And so they have not fully been satisfied by the moves that we've made. Even though there's distinct improvement, they want more. The lovely thing now is I think that with the increased understanding that we have of the system, I really see a way to get more and without imperiling New York City's water supply. So I'm a bit optimistic. There's a lot of work to be done, but I think that we both have the technological understanding through the OR work that we've done, and I'm hoping that we can reestablish the good relations within our community and with the political decision makers. You know, we have to remember, I've always remembered, that we needed unanimous agreement from four states in New York City in order to get any change. And the politicians always held up before us the specter that if the conservationists couldn't really agree and couldn't make some compromises, they would be not unhappy to revert to the old system, which was satisfactory from their viewpoint, but not from ours.
We only have time for one more question. How do you see your research being applied by other regions dealing with conflicting water constituencies? I understand, for example, that I don't know if it's Atlanta or the entire state of Georgia that's having water conflicts with its neighbors.
Yes. That is a very, very interesting and difficult situation that has some commonality with the problems that we faced. And so the Delaware River Basin Commission itself, who were the implementers of the program that we designed, and several members of our coalition have been consulted by the parties in Atlanta to try to bring some of the thinking that we've used to into the picture there. Now, it's not yet clear whether one could take our model and adapt it, you know, just drop it into this new situation. What is perhaps more likely is that the style of thinking that we've used, of using analysis to balance these conflicting interests, and having a group of conservationists who took a broad view and who worked at bringing people together is a model that could be used. In the next few months, I think we'll have a clearer vision of what will transpire there. But I would expect that the phone might ring up here, and we might be going down to Atlanta to tell them about some aspects of our work.
It sounds exciting. That's all the time we have today. We've been talking with Professor Peter Kolesar of Columbia University. Professor, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Barry. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you for listening to the Science of Better podcast by INFORMS, the Institute for Operations Research and the Management Sciences. For more about operations research and this series of podcasts, visit us on the web at www.informs.org. Good day, and remember, keep on crunching those numbers.